Today filled with nice men. We opened with Ray Fittipaldo and his back and forth with Tomlin the other day, and we've wound ourselves all the way around to Jerry DePaula of the Trib. But first, and I'm sure Jerry can relate to this, and he's probably looking forward to this, Limits, you and I and Donnie will be recording Friday morning the first tracks of our Malzy Christmas album. It's a very Malzy Christmas. You and I and Donnie working on such hits as The 12 Days of Malzy, Malzy the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Malzy the Snowman, and I think Donnie Football is going to do a dramatic reading of "Twas the Night Before Malzy." So
yes, up on the housetop, up on the Malzy.
Yeah.
Malzy on the mantle.
Yeah, all of that. We're going to work opens for that tomorrow morning. It's going to be another Donnie Football Friday. I was accidentally rehearsing when I thought that the mic was off in our last segment, and this is what happened.
Monday.
Muslim.
Monday Night Football.
That was, I think that was the 12 Days of Malzy I was working on there. So that's exciting, I think, that we're going to put that out.
Might be exciting for us. I don't know if it will be for the listeners. We'll see if they take any enjoyment in it.
I think they will. And this brings us to Jerry DePaula of the Trib. Not on the eve, we're on the day of a huge Pitt game. Jerry, how are you?
Good, Joe. Where can I get that recording so I can play it for my family when they come up Christmas Eve?
See, we're already getting interest here. Limits, the a very Malzy Christmas. I don't know yet, Jerry. We have to, rehearsals begin tomorrow. It's a big day. We're going to have sort of this behind the scenes, hopefully a camera there, outtakes, things like that. And I'm particularly looking forward to Donnie Football, a dramatic reading. I don't know if Donnie wants to sing, so we're going to have him read in his classic and, you know, very natural Pittsburghese, "Twas the Night Before Malzy." You'll be nice. Buying that, won't you?
Absolutely, whatever it costs.
Jerry, we got a big game tonight.
Yes,
so I want you to tell us, first of all, with this Pitt team, the key to this matchup tonight against Syracuse.
The key to the matchup, Joe, is putting pressure on Kyle McCord. Kyle McCord, you know, is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. He's after the aerial attack, Syracuse aerial attack is second number two, 365 yards per game through the air. And Pitt's secondary is pretty good. Their safeties are very good, very experienced. Donovan McMillan is one of the best safeties in the ACC. And they finally got a pass rush going against California. They got six sacks. But before that, the pass rush was kind of mediocre. If they get a elite pass rush like they usually get in previous years, I think they can put a pressure on McCord and beat McCord. But it's going to be a tough game, a close game. Pitt's not going to be able to run away with it because Pitt never runs away with any game. Even the North Carolina game was tied going into the fourth quarter. They had to come from behind to beat Cincinnati, West Virginia. The missed field goal helped them beat California. Pitt plays games like that. They're going to play games like that for tonight and for the rest of the season.
Jerry, how good is this Pitt team? And dare we dream of a Pitt-Penn State playoff game?
We can dream because I think it's possible. I was just thinking about this as I was listening to the show this morning, Joe. If Pitt, big if they beat Syracuse tonight and they go to Dallas and beat a ranked SMU team, they're number 22 in the country, I think they could be in the top 12 when the first college football playoff rankings come out on election night. Maybe you disagree with me, but I think they could be in the top 12 when they're 8-0 with victories against Syracuse and SMU back-to-back. And to me, that tells me they got a chance to go all the way. Now, Clemson is another story. They got to win that one, too. But to get into the ACC championship game, maybe they lose just one game. They go 5-1 the rest of the way. And again, another big if. They have a chance to get in a championship game, and then after that, anything's possible.
Jerry, you know, when I look at this team, there's coming off of a 3-win season last year, I don't think Pat Narduzzi is getting enough credit. Like, obviously, when you're undefeated 6-0, but the way that he's been able to get this team to bounce back from last season, everything completely in the rearview mirror, it's like nothing happened and his hands have been wiped clean. I think Narduzzi's been doing a really nice job.
Not just a bounce back, Austin, but a change in an attitude, a change in philosophy. You know, here's a coach, you know, who's been steeped in tradition, run game, pro-style offense, you know, line up with two tight ends and jam it down the defensive throat. And here he brings in Cade Bell, a 31-year-old offensive coordinator from an FCS school, Western Carolina. And he turns the keys over to him and says, here you go. It's your offense. You make it work. And they brought in the right pieces to do it, you know, with Desmond Reed, with Poppy Williams, who played for Bell at Western Carolina. And that had to be difficult for Narduzzi to change because he's been a coach for a lot of years. His father was a coach. And they're using an offense like that, which is totally different than anything he's ever run anywhere he's been, tells me that the guy knows how to adapt and tells me the guy is a good coach.
Eli Holstein's on pace for 30 touchdown passes, but he had a tough last game, Jerry. Did that game sort of expose some things with him, or are you thinking it was more just a blip on the radar here?
Well, he's a redshirt freshman. He's going to have games like that. He's going to have more than one game like that, I'm afraid, especially when the games get more difficult. And maybe Syracuse won't be the team that does it. Maybe SMU will down in Dallas. Maybe that'll be his second time hitting the wall. But I think he's very talented. He's very confident. He has a very good rapport with his wide receivers. That touchdown pass he threw to Day-Day Reynolds in the West Virginia game, late in the game, where he was covered by three guys. He threw it up because he trusted Day-Day Reynolds to go up and get it. And, you know, quarterbacks and wide receivers and pass catchers need to have that connection, and he has that. Plus, he runs really well. You need to run too much against California because California penned him in a little bit more than anybody else has done. But he's tough. He can break tackles. He did in that West Virginia game. And I think he has everything, all the ingredients you need. But, again, he's young. He's going to make mistakes. You never know when those are going to emerge.
How many people for the game tonight, you figure, Jerry?
Just talking to Austin about that a minute ago. 50 to 55, I think. What do you think, Jerry? You're better at making predictions like that than I am. But 55 for sure.
55,000?
Yes, yes.
Mm.
Is that too many, you think?
Oh, that would be pretty good,
I think.
That'd
be a really good number for them.
Can they get it? Can they make 55?
Well,
I think
well,
they can.
What's leading you to say that? Is that an educated opinion?
Yeah, well, they had almost 50 for the California game.
Mm.
And I think, you know, Pittsburgh is a big event town. It always has been. And this is a big event.
Should be a nice night, yeah.
Right? The weather's good.
Decent,
Sports Center is going to do their show from the Cathedral of Learning, the lawn in front of the Cathedral of Learning. So, you know, there may be a lot of people, with the weather being nice, who finish dinner and say, let's drive down to Acacher Stadium and buy tickets. Tickets will be available. I'm not trying to sell them, but tickets will be available, and you can probably just walk up to the gate and buy one. So I think it's going to be around 50, not 60, but around 50, 52, 53, 55 maybe.
Holy bird milk. And limits here will be one of them. You could get on SportsCenter limits if you play your cards right.
It's a real possibility with Matt Barry.
They should interview him and talk about the show.
Jerry, the team's obviously undefeated, having a really good year, but what do they need to improve on most to make sure that this success continues?
Well, I think the offensive line has to come together a little bit better than it has been, you know, for most of the previous six games. They have some injuries in the offensive line, which they did in the California game, the whole left side of the line. Branson Taylor and Ryan Jacoby missed most of that game. And, of course, Pat Narduzzi isn't talking about injuries, so we don't know whether those two guys are going to play tonight. As a matter of fact, he even said after that game that Cade Bell, you know, toned down the play calling on offense because they didn't think maybe the injured offensive line could hold up and protect Eli Holstein. Maybe that's another reason Holstein didn't play so well, because of the injuries. But that has to get better, and I think their pass defense has to get better. And that wasn't bad. They're very good against California, but it has to get better. But the guy to watch, of course, is number nine, linebacker Kyle Lewis, who just has a sprinter speed and a kind of nose for the ball that makes him a guy that the Syracuse is going to have to pay attention to all night, because he is tough and he runs like his hair's on fire. And I really believe that he has a real good chance to be an all-ACC linebacker this year.
Did you say he runs like his hands are on fire?
His hair, said.
His hair. Okay. Sorry. I just wanted to clarify there. I thought you were a mixed metaphor there, Jerry. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar and Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And Jerry is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. On a side note, Limits and Jerry, Elizabeth Francis, the oldest person in the United States, has passed away in Houston. R.I.P. She was 115 years old. Jerry, how long do we want to make it here? Does anybody want to go to 115 limits?
I will go as long as I can.
Really?
I hope to make 100.
Jerry, I'm pretty much sick of everybody, including myself. I can't imagine what I would feel like at, say, 108. I think I may want out by that point.
I think you and I, Joe, would have a nice conversation. So I'll turn 100 way before you do. So when I turn 100 and I'm still coherent, you and I got to have a conversation about all the things we've seen down through the years, and that would be quite a conversation.
So limits at 111, you're gonna have that desire to keep going.
Well, I said 100, but 111, yes, maybe. If I can make it that far, I can be close to the history books. Why not shoot for the stars?
You know what the real kicker is, Jerry? Ron's gonna outlive us all because he got out of the business. He's down in Florida walking every day. He's lost 20 pounds. I still can't believe it. If you would have asked me a year ago today, the one Pittsburgh media member who they're going to have to rip the jersey off him before he leaves, I swear it would have been Ron without a close second. I thought he might go down, in flames in the studio one day at age 98. Jerry? He got out of it. He's in Florida.
He's the most relaxed man in America right now. I give Ron a lot of credit, and I hope someday I can be as relaxed and be as content as he is. But he's very content, very relaxed, and he had a great career. And he worked hard, all his life, so he deserved it. And I thought it would have been you. We would have to tear the jersey off.
I don't think it's going to be me, but, man, have you talked to Ron lately?
I text messaged a few times. Whenever Narduzzi and I get into it, Ron will send me a text laughing about it, I haven't spoken with him, but we had a nice conversation last year when we drove to West Virginia together for the Pitt-West Virginia game. Very interesting.
That was a chance for you and Ron to bond. And he knew the end of his career was coming, but none of us did. So I think he chose that night, honestly, to probably bond with you, Jerry.
We had a good time. Ron and I have been friends for a lot of years. We worked together at the Pittsburgh Press back in the day. I was on the copy desk, and he was a columnist. And Ron just used to live about a mile from me. And if I was outside cutting the grass, Ron would pull his car up and stop and chat. So I miss him, actually. I became good friends with his daughter, Taylor, and my wife.
Wonderful
and I,
person,
and,
yeah.
Yes, she is. A really, really nice girl. I'm happy for Ron. I really am. I hope someday soon I can do the same thing.
It's a very heartwarming end to this interview, is it not, Limits?
Yeah, I feel like I want to have a blanket and snuggle and cozy up to by the fire listening to the stories.
There's a little tear coming down my cheek right now, guys. It's a little tear.
I do miss Ron. I really do. And he did have a hell of a career, didn't he, Jerry?
He had a great career.
Yeah.
Great writer, great reporter. Nobody asked better questions than Ron. And I tell you what, I used to watch him do the interviews in his gang set settings. And he never had a tape recorder. He wrote everything down.
Unbelievable. I used to look at his notes and say, are you kidding me? I said, I try to keep, copious notes, if that's the right word.
Right.
And I can't read my own writing there. He had like a shorthand method. And it was chicken scratch. It wasn't legible to any human except him. It was unbelievable.
He's the only one that had to read it. Yep, he's the only one that had to read it. So, yeah, he's one in a million. And there was one picture I remember when you were down there to visit him, I guess maybe a few months after he retired.
Yeah.
You guys had the two biggest, most self-satisfied smiles on your faces I've ever seen. It was two really good friends getting together. And I really appreciated that.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Jerry, but it was two guys who used to work together getting together.
And he did a good job working together.
Thank you, Jerry.
Became good friends.
Who's your best friend in the business?
My best friend in the business? Oh, geez. Everybody is tied for first place. I like everybody.
That's why. Jerry, does Narduzzi still take good-natured shots at you from time to time, and you ever go back at him?
Absolutely. Well, I did. I can tell you a quick story. I've told this before, but about a year ago, I was walking up those steps in the parking lot at the Pete, and I fell, and I sprained my wrist. and I had to put a brace on my wrist, you know, for about a week or so. Went to a news conference the next week, and I was ready to ask a question. I held up the brace so he could see it, and he says, "Jerry," he says, "what happened to your wrist?" And I said, "Coach, we don't talk about injuries."
That's good. That's good, Jerry. Did he get a laugh out of that?
Oh, he laughed like heck. He really did. He really enjoyed it. He said, "Good answer. Good answer."
I love it.
I came back at him.
Well, Jerry, we appreciate your coverage. Good to hear your voice again, and we'll talk soon. We'll see where this pit season goes. Thank you, sir.
Hey, Joe, anytime. Glad to talk to you in Austin.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, Jerry.
Take care.
What a man he is, huh, Limits?
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. We had a...
Why are some people nice? How could anybody be that nice? Does it mean that he's harboring anger, that he never expresses it? Is it unhealthy or healthy that he's that nice?
I think it's healthy. I think it's pretty healthy. I don't think it's unhealthy. When we went to Greensboro to cover Pitt in the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago, and all the beat writers went out. We all went out for dinner. And yeah. Our main event was to get Jerry to go to dinner with us. And there I am, appearing with George Michalowski, and there's Jerry at the head of the table, just sitting there ready to go. And I was like, wow, the legend is here.
He's the best of us, isn't he? He's the best of us. But is there any rage boiling underneath that's unexpressed?
I'm sure. Everybody has some rage that is unexpressed.
Maybe I just don't trust that. That there isn't rage, but I certainly trust that Jerry's nice.
I heard
he might be the nicest man I've ever met, and I mean that.
I heard Mulsey say yesterday or 2 days ago on the air that you have something on everybody that would end their friendship, that would end the friendship with you and someone.
A nuclear button. I got nothing on Jerry. Nothing.
Nothing on Jerry.
I did make Jerry angry once because I used to say he was the Steelers beat writer for the Trib, and I was a columnist there. And when the other guys would break a story, I would say he would say anything, and I would say, "I don't know, Jerry, you're the beat writer." And then he would start to get angry. And then one time, I pulled his chair with him in it across the room.
Ooh,
and he was already, I don't know why. I've done that to you, right?
Yes, you have, multiple times.
I guess just for fun. And he was already in for what for Jerry was a bad mood, and he got really mad. I have a talent for that, I guess.
Of making people mad?
Nice people. Making nice people mad.
Yes.
All right. Now I'm sad about Ron. I can't stop thinking about Ron now.
For somebody who doesn't consider Ron a quote-unquote great friend, you do talk about Ron a lot.
We're not great friends. Ron would be the first to say that.
A good friend?
And I would be the second. No.
A friend?
Yes. Guess how many times Ron and I socialized outside of work?
Four.
Less.
Two.
Less.
One?
Yes.
Wrong. That was in Florida you were there. That's socializing.
That's two. But we weren't working together, so it doesn't count.
So what was the other occurrence?
I don't remember. Oh, it was the night he took me to, he told me to meet him at Shooters. He told me to meet him there for a drink. I'm like, what? Ron's never asked me to meet him anywhere for any reason. And I got there, and there he was, saddled up to the bar. I'm like, is he going to tell me that something is horribly wrong with him? Or what's happening? Why have I been invited here? And he said, well, something to the effect of, well, Folsey, we know he's leaving, and guess what? And this was his quote. I'm following him out the door.
So that's why Ron invited you to basically say this is the beginning of the farewell tour.
Yeah. And I respected that he told me pretty much before anybody at work, I think before maybe one person knew, but he hadn't told them. It was unbelievable. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I never, ever, ever thought that he would be the guy to leave, and off he went.
And there wasn't a dry eye in the room.
I'll never forget that either. And Joe Namath calling, I still get people who come up and talk to me about Ron's last show, about Joe Green and Joe Namath calling in that final segment. It's incredible, wasn't it?
When I did the Baldwin panel and they said, like, who are the coolest people that you've ever talked to or interviewed, that's one of the things that I brought up. Joe Green, Joe Namath, 20 minutes.
Joe Namath still, maybe you have to be of a certain age, but we talk to a lot of people in this business. People call us, especially when I used to do, you know, more interviews with people. The only time I ever said to my wife, hey, come here and listen to who's on this, who's on my, you know, messages here, was Joe Namath. The only time. What is it about him? I guess it's a lot limits. Although he didn't call us back last week, did he?
My dad thought it was really cool talking to Jack Ham last week.
That was great.
That was awesome.
Wasn't it?
He's a big, big Jack Ham, Jack Lambert guy.
A lot of people are big Ham and Lambert guys of a certain age. What were Ham's top four or top five defensive players in Steelers history? He was very modest and didn't want to choose himself or Lambert because he wanted to give the current day players, you know, equal time.
He had Joe Green, Blunt, Woodson, Troy, and TJ.
And TJ. Lambert has to be in there, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Some people would put Ham in there over Lambert.
Ron being among them. And Ron would tell you that Ham or Lambert said that Ham was their greatest linebacker ever. But I pointed out to Ron, much to his chagrin, that Lambert said that, or Ham said the same thing about Lambert.
Somebody pointed out, Joe, didn't you go to the roast of Ron Cook a couple years ago?
No. And Ron held that against me. I don't like roasts. They feel passive aggressive. They feel like there's a lot of truth in a joke.
Yeah, but you're not the one being roasted.
Well, yeah, but it makes me, you know, secondhand uncomfortable because I know that the person being roasted really, in a lot of instances, doesn't like it. It's just not fun. It's uncomfortable for me.
I would have been there just to watch. No, I did not. I wasn't like old enough to, not old enough to go, but old enough to feel like I'd be like a part of it.
I could have taken you there. What do you mean you weren't old enough to go?
When was this?
Was somebody
going to
take you in a stroller with a binky in your mouth? What do you mean?
When was this?
Like 6-7 years ago.
I might have been in high school.
I actually
might have had a game that night. I think that might have been it.
Would I had to have ordered a high chair for you there? What do you mean?
No, I'm clearly tall enough. But as you like to make fun of my weight.
I don't make fun of it. I just point it out. You can point out my weight. Mine's worse than yours.
I don't know your weight.
About 215 right now. Okay, I won't do that anymore.
You can do whatever you'd like.
No, you've made that clear today. And I won't, and I apologize.
The texters were like, Joe is so mean to you. And I said, nah, it's not really. It's fine.
It's just locker room banter, right?
That's right.
You weigh in at 140. I consider that on one hand
145 pounds.
145. Commendable, but also remarkable.
I have a very quick metabolism.
I know.
I need to go back and hit the weights.
All right.
I have a gym membership that I have not used in like a couple months, and I have to go back. And I keep seeing it pop up on my statement every month.
Why don't they ever say that you're mean to me? You take shots at me all the time about my age, my weight.
Your age?
Yes, my vision. You've done that.
Your vision? Now you're just pulling things out of your behind, just trying to make it feel even.
See what you did there? You made fun of me for that. That's a good way to end that segment. All eyes on Cooper Kupp tonight. Be watching the Pitt game. And we'll be watching Cooper Kupp just to see how he looks. Steelers said to be interested. Mike Florio on the station yesterday. And here's the thing, Limits. Like, I hear what Florio's saying. He's probably right. That the Steelers will try to, quote, wait to swoop in and get a bargain on Cooper Kupp. He says, he said this on Pro Football Talk, on his podcast, and I quote, "The Steelers are fascinating to me because they like to lurk. They like to hover. They like to wait to swoop in and get a bargain. They're not going to go too quickly. No sudden moves. They don't like to be perceived as being desperate in a situation like that. If it means they don't get the guy, so be it. That's the best way to get a good deal. You act like you don't want it." Okay, but you also don't get the deal, probably. Like, how is this a point of admiration? The last I checked, the receiver room beyond George Pickens has guys like Van Jefferson, Scotty Miller, Calvin Austin. They haven't got that. They told the world in the preseason. They told the world, we think we're short a playmaker, to the point where we're willing to dole out upwards of $30 million a year to get one. Like, we're not in the market to go get you know, Christian Kirk here. We think we need a guy, and we're willing to spend lots and lots of money to get one. And last I checked, they still don't have one. And it's hard for me to believe that they still don't think that's a need, regardless of what Russell Wilson might unlock in this offense. So Mike Florio can pay all the compliments he wants to their strategy. I'd rather have them go after a guy quickly and decisively, and if need be, overpay. That's how you get the guy. Not waiting and lurking for a good deal. I don't find that admirable. You?
It kind of reminds me, Joe, of the old saying, if you're not first, you're last. And I wonder if Omar Khan, because admirable, whatever, he was second on Brandon Ayuk. They were in on Davante Adams. They didn't get Davante Adams. I'm sure they probably called on DeAndre Hopkins. Don't you get to a boiling point? Like, where it's not just admirable that you're, okay, we're calling on this guy, we're calling on that guy. You're doing your due diligence. Doesn't it get a little concerning if you're Omar Khan, though, that you're not pulling off deals, or you just get a little bit frustrated, maybe not just with other teams, but yourself, and you eventually push it over the goal line to be able to have something happen? That's what I feel like with Cooper Kupp now. It's that time.
I often make reference to Jim Rutherford because I love the way that he did business, and I realize that by the end it wasn't very pretty, and that he sometimes swung and missed, but he had a way of getting the people that he wanted, and the way that he did that was to be early and decisive, and in some cases, overpay. That's how you get it done. So while lurking, you know, how long are they going to lurk? The trade deadline's November 5th, and we've all seen their wide receiver room beyond Pickens. So, hey, if he swoops in at, you know, noon or 11:59 or whenever right before the deadline is on November 5th and makes a deal to fix that, great. I'm not sure I love the strategy, but I would wait to see how Cooper Kupp looks tonight. I can tell you that because he is coming off a high ankle sprain.
Very curious just to, one, see how he plays. Two, because everybody keeps saying he's just a slot receiver, where does he line up? Like another instance of, all right, he's back healthy. Are there any limitations? I want to see him in the slot. I want to see him outside. I want to see all the different places that Sean McVay puts him, not like Arthur Smith to Sean McVay. But at the same time, if they lose this game, which everybody in Pittsburgh should be rooting for, then they're, and Cooper Kupp is still considerably good, you really should offer a second-round draft pick where even whatever that notion is of whatever's offered. Like we saw it with the deal that was made for Davante Adams. Second round pick.
How about a third round pick?
Being a conditional third round pick.
Yeah, conditional third round.
That's what this could be, a conditional third that becomes a second.
50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Let's move on to some NFL stuff around the league. Davante Adams. He just showed up. I mean, coming up at the top of the hour. I'm sorry, limits.
You can jump the gun.
Yeah, you
false
can strike
start. False start. Penalty.
Yeah, you're moving back five. But I understand why you did that. And the theme of the rest of the show is me being as nice to you as I possibly can be. I understand why you did that.
Do you remember when you said on that one show you weren't going to call me City Limits the whole show, and then 5 minutes in you did?
Yes.
The texter's got a real joke out of that one.
Around the league, Davante Adams showed up 5 minutes ago, and now he's telling everybody what's wrong with the Jets' locker room. Do we like this, or is this a little bit presumptuous? And then there's Baltimore, and what's going on with the Ravens, and they're on pace for something that is really mind-blowing here.